another podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting. Accounting Firm Security to Go is a monthly discussion with Executive Editor Greg LaFollette and Information Security Expert Dave Cieslak.
Hello, Greg LaFollette, Executive Editor of the CPA Technology Advisor. Today we're recording Accounting Firm Security to Go, Episode 5, one of our recurring monthly podcasts in the Intersection Live a series of recurring monthly podcasts. A couple of things to point out for you if you are a new listener, just a couple of things to remember. We keep copious show notes. Actually, not copious, but we do keep show notes. And so as we go through today, as my guests talk about different products, websites, telephone numbers, product names, things like that, you don't have to scramble for a pencil. They'll all be in the show notes. You can simply, as you're listening to this, stop over to CPA Technology Advisor. That's cpatechadvisor.com, or simpler way, cpata.com, and click on Intersection Live. You'll see Accounting Firm Security to Go, along with our sister podcast, Tech to Go, Document Management for Accountants to Go, and finally, Small Business Consulting to Go. And you'll see all of us there and all of them there. Just click on AFS to Go, and this is episode 5. You'll see that, and you click there, and you'll have all of the information you need, nicely organized and hopefully bookmarked and hyperlinked and everything you might ever need. In addition to that, if you happen to have any questions or comments or thoughts, concerns, congratulations, criticisms, comments, whatever they happen to be, condolences, give us a call. Our voicemail line for Intersection Live is 800-456-0864. And our extension is 2106. And I will warn you that we oftentimes not only take those questions, but sometimes we pull people back onto the show and talk to them and kind of walk through things and make sure we understand and try and solve the problem, because if you as a practitioner have the problem, there's a real, real good chance that someone else might also. So with that said, let's go ahead and roll. We try and keep AFS to Go to about 45 minutes, and we will try to honor that today. My regular recurring guest, a guy who comes and shares his expertise with me so kindly every month in the middle of an otherwise, I'm sure, very, very busy schedule, my friend David Cieslak, hailing from the valley out there in Los Angeles. Beautiful weather. David, welcome.
Thank you very much, Greg.
I appreciate your taking time. I know you're getting real, real busy. You're getting ready for a little vacation, right?
Correct. We're out of here for about a week, so it's looking forward to it.
Good for you. Well, you get to go do some things. I'm looking forward to a little time out. We're actually not going to record AFS to Go in April. I will be in Brazil for that entire month, and David was kind enough to let me off the hook. So we will be back to our regular schedule in May, but we will be taking the month of April off, because I'm not sure my telephone cord would reach all the way to São Paulo, so we're gonna pass on that. In addition to David, our regular guest, I call you a guest. You're really the host. I'm just here to kind of introduce things. And push
yeah, I'm a real. I'm getting to be a real fixture here.
Yeah, you're the guy that makes it all happen. You know, you've become the security guru in the profession of public accounting. Every time I turn around, I see you doing another presentation, another article, another webcast, another presentation, trying to help your your comrades in bean counting stay safe and secure, and I sure appreciate everything that you do for the magazine and for the profession as a whole. You do a lot for the Institute and a lot for the Cal Society, and occasionally you spend a little time actually running your practice out there in L.A., right?
Correct, and happy to be a part, that's for certain.
Well, that's great. We have a special guest today, an old friend of mine who's agreed to join us, Michael Bodner. Michael's an interesting guy. Michael's PhD is in theoretical physics, and when Michael and I worked together in the accounting software industry a long, long time ago, and I had an organization called Product Strategy, and Michael headed an organization cleverly labeled Development. We used to make a quick throwaway line was, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to write accounting software, but just in case, we have one. Michael, welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So you've been, Michael, you've got a pretty fascinating background. In addition, started out life as an academic, and then went to the dark side. You spent some time working for NASA. Then you did some consulting.
Right.
You were over with Thomson. You went out and ran their global strategy in the technology side. Spent some time with ProQuest, and you do a lot of consulting. You just got back from Australia consulting with some people. How was that trip?
That's right. My body's back. My mind isn't. I'm still kind of confused as how I got an extra day in this week.
Well, it's actually tomorrow already.
It's tomorrow already somewhere.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, after this call, I have a Friday morning meeting in Australia at 6:30 tonight, so it's
very
be,
very confusing for
very confusing.
For us mere mortals. Well, I very much appreciate your agreeing to stop in and spend some time with us today. Last month, David and I were visiting actually with one of our listeners, and there were a series of questions around appliance boxes.
Right.
Is that the right thing to call that, David, what we were talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So we were having this conversation, and a couple of the things popped up that we had seen. Michael, you were at CES. We were there actually together for a couple of events, and wandering around looking at some different things. We saw some things that were pretty interesting.
Right.
And I wanted to have you talk a little bit about those, and maybe we can kind of introduce David to a couple of the things that we saw, and we'll talk about how they work and what they do. Now, I know the other day my phone rang, and you were calling me from Sydney.
Right,
that
right.
That thing called the Magic Jack. This isn't security, but it's darn fascinating. Tell me what that
right.
is.
Right. Well, just to couch it, the two things that I came away from CES with were in the category of these little things that they plugged into the USB ports that were really past the edge of clever, things that I couldn't have anticipated in coming. The Magic Jack, I think, is absolutely one of the coolest inventions I've ever seen. And we were walking around CES, and the fellow said, here's a little computer in a USB box. It's about the size of a pill box, so it's a little bit bigger than a thumb drive and kind of hogs, depending on your laptop, would actually eat a couple of slots. But you plug it into your computer, and assuming your computer is online with some decent connection, a broadband connection, there's a jack that looks like a telephone jack on the other side of this cube. And you,
not only looks like, it is.
It is, that's right. And so you take a telephone, a standard telephone, and plug it in and pick up the receiver, and there's a dial tone.
So, and this is a standard telephone like the one that just happened to be on your desk in that hotel in Sydney, right?
That's right. And which is even more remarkable because, you know, nothing else is right in Sydney. They do everything else on the wrong side. But
you did have to turn it upside down.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. But the telephone worked. And there were two fascinating things. First off, I was able to dial you without a country code because I wasn't really using a country code.
And when my phone popped up, it showed that you were calling from 734, which is an Ann Arbor, Michigan area code.
That's right. When I registered this Magic Jack, it gave me a telephone number, and I can receive phone calls on that telephone number. I have voicemail, call forwarding, just everything you would expect. My wife was actually able to call the hotel room in Australia from our phone, and it rang directly. So the really remarkable thing is anywhere you are in the world, and this will work for you in Brazil as well, all you need is a Magic Jack, and you can talk to anyone in the United States or the Virgin Islands or Puerto Rico
for free.
The cost is kind of amazing. I think the unit itself is $40, which includes the first year of service, and then for every year after that, you pay $20, and it's the only bill you'll ever see. So the quality is pretty good. You heard it from Australia. There was no lag or anything. And what really started to open my eyes in the second product that we talk about in a little while is the idea that people have said, they've all moved in the direction of putting storage in the USBs. The thumb drives are now ubiquitous. People, when we were at CES, were giving away their press packets on USB thumbs. But now they have enough room to put computers and firmware and RAM in the thumb. And basically, this whole thing that is going on with the Magic Jack and with the security products are all completely happening outside of your computer with their own CPU and their own RAM.
So this little thing is way beyond just some memory, right? It's actually it's really a little Linux box, right?
It is. Both of the products we're talking about are little Linux boxes. And again, if you took them apart, you would find that they have to be complete computers. They're moving data around. They have a bus. They have RAM. They have I/O support chips, and they're all in there. And the cleverness of this is that your mom could, or anybody who's not technical could use this. All that you do is you plug it in, and it says, "Please wait a moment." And while you're waiting, you'll be saving money for the rest of your life. There's absolutely no installation of any complexity, and then you just plug a phone in, and you're off. So, when you go to the MagicJack.com site, you'll discover that they've won many awards as the most innovative product of the year, and universities are starting to hand these out to kids, and a lot of parents with kids in colleges have jumped on the bandwagon because now instead of using cell phone minutes, the kids can talk to anybody they want for as much as they want, and there's no bill. So very, very interesting piece. I fear that any stockholders in AT&T or Verizon will not like this story, but Greg made a very funny point when we were at the booth that here you have, if I'm sitting someplace with a wireless connection and I have a box that has a dial tone, I could plug it into the modem in the back of the computer if I have a modem and potentially dial into the internet and have one of those infinite mirror scenarios. But that, as funny as that sounds, I haven't yet tested this. I am working on an article, and I'm going to test this for the article. But I have a TiVo box in a room, and I don't have a phone jack nearby, so I'm going to go over there and plug my TiVo into the Magic Jack and see if I can get my, buy a movie over that phone line. But the fascinating piece is that they built an infrastructure on the back end that works, and it works from anywhere in the world where the internet is. And eventually, this kind of technology will be available in other countries, I think.
Well, so in terms of, let's try and relate this back to security, and I want to toss this over to you, David, because there's got to be a gotcha here. There's got to be a hole. There's got to be a danger because there's a danger everywhere. I mean, there's always a boogeyman. Where's the potential here? What should we be thinking about? It's not just I don't want to fall in love with the magic jack, although it is kind of cool. There are a whole bunch of devices like this coming down the pike.
Right.
You know, the other one that you were talking about, Michael, was over on the security side. We'll get
right
to that one. But
right,
but in this telephone thing, David, this VoIP in a box. Do you see a gotcha here?
Well, I think on any of these things where you've got potentially, you know, some type of appliance that we're plugging into the network or to, you know, directly into a machine, I think one of the things you're always, you know, need to be just very aware of is depending on, you know, what is running on that particular device. And I know we mentioned, you know, Linux here, and that's not uncommon that a lot of these plug-in appliances are in fact using Linux underneath as the operating system that, you know, then the specific application that the vendor has written is running on top of. But you know, just need to be aware of just the fact that, you know, it still potentially has its own security, you know, holes or vulnerabilities depending on versions and so forth. So it's just it's really one of those just, you know, heads up before you plug anything in. Do we really know what's going on here? Do we know potentially if there's soft spots or you know, security holes in it? You know, where does this all of a sudden create a conduit or an entry point, you know, into our systems that we didn't intend?
It's a very interesting point. There is an entire computer out there, and that appliance, you have to ask the question of whether or not your existing security software is even aware of such a potential threat. It's not looking to the USB port for a computer. It's looking, you know, at maybe bit patterns and files and things like that, or certain calls. But there is a possibility here that you could corrupt, that you could come tunneling in through that device, because it is a full-blown computer, which is why the other device is even more interesting, because it's a device in itself, and it addresses that exact question.
Yeah, and I guess hand in hand, you know, again, it's one thing if we as, you know, folks who are, you know, computer comfortable are touching this stuff and playing
right
with this stuff and plugging it into our machines and aware of potentially, you know, the risks or what might be going on if something seems to be, you know, looking to be misbehaving. But, you know, I at an organizational level, I know a lot of folks are just saying, you know what, I need to take back control of what folks are sticking into USB ports. And there's even
right
software applications out there now that basically allow you to do, you know, control I/O. Well, that's probably the best way to say it, control input output, and basically saying, you know, if someone's plugging a USB device into a machine, what do I want to allow or disallow? And really just starting to kind of try to get on top of that from a policy perspective and say, I will or won't allow, you know, someone to put, you know, any one of these kinds of, or, you know, certain kinds of devices I may want to restrict. So, you know, that, I mean, it's absolutely terrific. You know, a product like Magic Jack working through USB or some of these other appliances, but you know, just again, it's as I always preach, Greg, and I know we've heard this. I guess everybody's probably tired of me saying, you know, this, you know, by now, but it's, we need to think of security first and convenience
right
second, and that truly does need to drive our thought process around these kinds of things.
Okay, you know, that said, I think the discussion of the second piece is interesting, because it actually is an appliance that addresses that issue.
Well, let's pop over and talk about it. Introduce
yeah
that for us, Michael.
Excuse me?
Yeah, go ahead, introduce that.
Yes. The Yogi Pico, this is the other, you know, won a PC Magazine Technical Excellence Award.
And what's the spelling on this, Michael?
Yogi, Yoggie.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's Bera or Bear, but, you know, it's
right
certainly, they get all these great names. But here you have something which is a USB box, a Linux-based box with a processor, but it has 13 security applications built into it. And on their boxes, they claim that this is security at a Pentagon level, and rather than being reactive, it's proactive, because it inserts itself between the outside world and your computer. So it's sitting there and doing things like, you know, anti-spyware and antivirus, and it has a VPN client, and takes care of proxies, and a lot of things that you would normally use something like McAfee or, you know, some internet security suite. There are a couple of very interesting ideas here in that when you do use some of these suites that are doing all of these things, you're actually using your main CPU and your main disk and the main data bus to manage this. So inevitably, security software slows people down. We heard that for years about Norton, that, you know, things were running terribly slowly on Norton, especially when you were trying to do web browsing. You had the security software interfering. Well, Yogi is one of these things. Again, you simply plug it in, stand back. It has its own operating system, its own CPU, its own RAM. It freshens itself in communications with the Yogi Corporation, you know, for all of the updated signatures for virus and spam. So all of that happens.
The combination, Michael. It's a product, but it's really a service, right?
Oh yeah, you're basically the first year. I think you spend the retail is around $100, and you get the first year service, and then, if I'm not mistaken, it's $100 a year after that as well.
Okay.
Similar to what you would have to do with renewing a McAfee license every year as well.
What's,
you know, in a software only.
What's that going to do for me that I wouldn't have with, you know, with McAfee, or, you know, I use NOD32, or somebody else is using a Symantec product or whatever. What's different about this?
It's invisible to you. It doesn't. First off, you do nothing. You simply plug it in, and it happens.
Right.
It's doing a lot of very data center type monitoring. So it is managing threat levels and sends you alerts sometimes on the threat level. But the biggest thing is that you'll see something like a 10% improvement in the performance of your machine, because you're actually uninstalling your other software and you're letting this block. Here's a 520 megahertz processor with its own RAM sitting off to the side of your computer doing all of this work, and that's all it's doing, and it leaves you to do whatever you need to do, and yet all of the internet traffic, everything that's coming up and down, is being monitored by this. And again, it just like the Magic Jack, it's very much designed for a consumer who's a non-technical person.
So, I've heard you talk a lot about these bloated security systems that are out there that, you know, they got every box checked and they get all this stuff loaded up and they're kind of a pain. Do you see this as a reasonable alternative?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, I've looked at the Yogi product before, and you know, have a pretty decent understanding of kind of what's in the stick, as it were. But I would tell you that I think it's a terrific approach that, you know, they're really trying to say, you know what, let's put it all together in a device, a consumer device, that we really can kind of try to take significant control of just of you know, what's going on from a security perspective, so I really think there's some real value there, especially maybe for those folks who aren't quite as you know, dialed into the bits and bytes and the details. So I really do look at something like this and say, I think it has a lot of promise. You know, the flip side of it is you know, I think you may have even heard me share this before too, that I don't know that there's any one product, one device, one vendor, you know, that's the do-all and be-all for security. So I want to make sure not to necessarily slip too far into that mindset or that, and I'll even call it a trap, because, I mean, you know, part of what we're trying to do here is make sure that we have some independent layers of security, and that, you know, some of it is, in fact, that they are independent layers that makes it, in fact, more secure. You know, the other thing I look at too, and this is, I kind of, you know, it's the, you know, kind of the other side of the sword, I always look at products like this and say, if it's trying to make it too simple or trying to take potentially too much of that and saying we'll do all the thinking for you, what we potentially find is we're either creating some access issues for ourselves, or we're in fact just kind of putting all of our eggs in that basket and potentially again, if we're looking at a device or something that's got its own issues, are we connected to that and in touch with that the way we need to be?
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely look at something like this, and again, I've looked at the Yogi product before, and definitely think it's a terrific approach, and can see why it's definitely got some good uptick on it, some good potential. But I also look at it and say I'm not so sure I necessarily need to want to push all my traffic through a device like this. So I look at something like this and say, if you've got some of these other pieces already in place on your system, it may or may not be really the right way to go.
I just want to add one other point. I did give a speech 2 years ago at AICPA Tech about taking your laptop everywhere and how dangerous wireless was. And we discovered a lot of people were just not protecting their wireless at all. And today there are more hotspots everywhere. Something like this is a mindless answer. If you simply plug this in, you're better off than if you don't have it plugged in. You might be, if you're smart enough to have the right software and do it yourself, you don't need it as much. I do agree with you, David, there. Mm-hmm. But there are a huge number of people who just are so excited about going off to the coffee shop or sitting in the airport lounge, and
yep.
and people could be lounging through their files, and I just know the kind of confidential stuff that we talked about, how the CPA has a lot of things on his computer. I have things on my computer. Almost anybody has emails and spreadsheets and Word docs that they wouldn't want to share. So this little lock and key approach is kind of an interesting thing. Although I do, I want to point out, in all honest disclosure, I did have a problem with the device. I was on my way to Australia, and just a few hours before I left, my computer would no longer go on the internet. It was only having local access, and I was doing everything I could. I had my wireless. I had a hard wire into the router. I tried everything, and finally, in desperation, I ripped out the Yogi, and the internet came back.
Yeah, and I guess that dovetails with the comment I was making. That is, we got to be careful. Sometimes these things protect us a little bit too well from ourselves, that we find ourselves having fits of frustration that we can't get on.
Yeah, it got into a state, and it didn't tell me it was in that state.
Mm-hmm.
And I called customer service, and they told me how to get it out of the state, and I got it out of the state, and it was fine. But I realized that, again, my mother or somebody who's not very sophisticated would, possibly say, oh, my computer died or something, and it could cause great panic. So trusting something as much as this is a good thing and a bad thing. I'm in complete concurrence on that side.
I have another part of a concern on this. So I'm running a firm here, and I've got I got three or four people that I'm providing laptops for, and they're going out to do various things, and hopefully they're a little bit smart, but they're in clients' offices, and they're down at the Starbucks or whatever. And they're pulling this laptop out, turning it on, shutting it up, putting it away, taking it somewhere else, turning it on. What happens when they pull it out, open it up, and forget the little Yogi? That's in another pocket in my case there, and I forgot to pull it out and plug it in because it's not a part of what's going on. So now I'm completely unprotected.
That's exactly.
And I don't know enough. I mean, if I put it on a machine over at my mother's apartment, and I can plug it in under the desk where she'd never notice it, that's a different thing.
No, you're absolutely right, because it would work, and it would work in a fully unprotected mode, and who knows what could happen. That's absolutely true.
You
wouldn't want it to work any other way, because
if the failed state,
you know, failed you and you were dead, then...
If you don't know that it's there,
right.
You also don't know that it's not there.
That's right. That's right. That is a very good point.
So, David, there are a whole bunch of devices. I think the bigger part of this is not, you know, these two devices, although they're both kind of cool. There's actually a third one there, and the third one is a bootable flash drive.
Right.
And these were, you know, these were 4 and 8 gig, and they'll very quickly, you know, be much larger than that. So if I have a bootable flash drive that, you know, that is 8 or 16 gig or something, I carry my whole computer in my pocket, and I go into the Hilton, and I walk into the business center, and I stick it into that machine and reboot into my little flash drive there. Now I've got a whole different paradigm to think about, right? I don't have to worry about about using somebody else's machine, like with a key logger or any kind of, I've solved all kinds of issues like that.
Correct. Yeah. No, that's not a bad approach, and we're going to see some more of that. Sometimes maybe not as convenient, or I think what we're going to find the flip side of that, some real value in having a computer on a stick, as we've kind of come to refer to that as. But I know that if I'm, at a hotel or whatever, and, they've got a business center, and I'm thinking, I've got my computer on a stick here on my USB device, and I'm going to plug that in and reboot. Whoops, wait a minute. They are apparently not letting me plug this in and use it for that purpose. So I look at those and I say, I think that's another one of those where I think the concept might be one with some merit, but what we've seen is, especially in these more public places, which would be the place where you'd want to use it the most, chances are they've locked you out of actually using it as it was intended.
And also,
so,
I think you'll get a lot of vendor pushback on that, just in the sense that licensing becomes a problem, the invoking of corporate policies become problematic, because you'd be having all the information, all the programs, without any of the control at that level. So
right, but for our audience who are small and medium sized accounting firms, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 people. That's
right.
Not an issue. We don't have these. We don't have great big IT departments that are trying to lock, push down group policies and do all sorts of stuff. You got a couple of people who are practicing public accounting during the day and trying to manage their network at night and on weekends, and trying to figure out an easy and economical but yet safe approach to what they're going to do and how they can go out and serve their clients.
Yeah, but you do remember that when we were asking the questions about bootable USB, people were reacting, "Oh, Microsoft would never allow that." Remember, there was this dreadful, almost religious fear that you would be violating the great, the paradigm of how the licensing needs to occur.
But licensing always follows technology.
Well, yeah. The thing is, you're saying here that you would install everything on the stick, right? And it would be the valid license, and therefore the valid license would go wherever you are. Is that what you're right?
Yeah, I'm not real interested in trying to be the license police, but somebody else can figure that out. I mean, Microsoft is we got the same issue, over on in the virtualization world.
Yeah.
David, you've read that. You've run into that a lot. Do you feel like you've got a handle on what the license really says in terms of setting up a virtual machine?
Oh, good gosh, no. I mean, I think that is truly one of those areas where the vendors themselves still have a lot of work to do, because, I've been through numerous discussions where people have kind of gone through the small print and tried to make sure they are understanding the letter of the law. and really with so many people in so many environments moving toward virtualization is just a smart way to work across the board for a lot of reasons.
Right.
We're going to need licensing that actually dovetails and supports that, and we're not there yet.
Right, right. So what other kinds of uses do you guys see for these little these little computer in a box, these little appliance type things? Is that the right place to put them, or should accountants really be pretty much still? Last month we were talking, Michael, about Sonic Walls and Barracudas and Cisco's got little boxes that are dedicated boxes. Is that still the right thing for firms to be thinking about, David?
Yeah, I would say from a definitely at the firm level, you're going to want an appliance that's basically sits at the perimeter. It's part of your overall network strategy. It's sitting in the rack along with the other servers and other core products that make the firm go. But I look at a lot of these USB devices and say I really think the place where they there's a lot of interest around them is that for many of us, we're carrying laptops day in and day out, and saying if this can afford me something, in terms of additional security, additional utility, in the case of something like Magic Jack and so forth, then absolutely it's something I probably need to be taking a look at. But I would, I look at all of these things and I just say, we just need to make sure we fully understand, both the capabilities, the limitations, and the security risks of these things before we just start plugging them in. I know one of the things we recently did within our firm is we basically went across the entire organization and bought memory sticks for everybody that have hardware encryption. So you talk about what's on these devices that are that each one of us seem to be carrying around in our pants pocket, and potentially some of the most confidential or the most sensitive information that many of us come in touch with, we've got on a memory stick because we moved it back and forth between ourselves and a client or ourselves and a staff member. And so I know that we basically recently, within the last month, just said, new policy, guys, you can't just use any memory stick. It's it's going to create a personnel issue between us if you do. And here's a memory stick, a 2 gig memory stick with hardware level encryption, and that way, in case it gets lost, we don't have to worry about the public relations disaster that might go with it.
Right.
But you still have a notification requirement.
Absolutely.
You lose it no matter how well you have it locked up, isn't that right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. So here, another case where legislation and regulation hasn't kept up with the technology, because if it's totally encrypted and totally locked down, then is it really lost?
Yeah. Don't you love that one?
Well, so here's an example. I lose my BlackBerry. I get out of a cab and I get in the hotel and I realize I don't have it. I pick up the phone. I call my network administrator and say, wipe my BlackBerry. And he pushes a couple of buttons and it's wiped. Did I lose my BlackBerry?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I would think as long as there's some kind of notification that it's been wiped, then I would say that device has not been lost, or at least the data has not been compromised.
Yeah, if it's unrecoverable, is it?
Yeah.
Can we certify that the wiping cannot be undone by a good hacker?
Yeah, I don't know what level of that's DOD level of wipe, or what the heck. I don't know the answer to that, but
right.
I do know that this notification thing is driving accounting firms all around the country nuts. Thanks to your state, David, that started the whole thing. Right?
We take the lead in so many ways, don't
exactly,
we, Greg?
Exactly. We appreciate you a lot.
We don't call him the governator for nothing.
Exactly. Well, that's an interesting thing. I see now that the iPhone will soon support Exchange.
Saw that.
I mean, that it will support remote wipe.
Right.
That whole thing is going to become a a whole platform in a whole other place to be all worried about security, right, David?
Correct. Yes.
So who do you suppose is going to be the first in the accounting world, in the tax world, to build some sort of an application and get it up there on the iTunes store so that you can load it up on your business iPhone?
Well, and I think as we see, you know, that device in particular, you know, with the whole Apple platform, as that continues to gain traction as something more than just a consumer device, but it really starts to take off as something that will support us, you know, in a business capacity, you know, with Exchange, you know, support now being added and so forth. I think we're going to, and now that they've opened it up to some level of extensibility, I think you are going to start to see everyone look at that and say, that looks to be, you know, another thing we probably need to be supporting.
One of the things that just came out last week at the, I guess, Macworld, that they, Kemper put up a $100 million venture capital fund.
To
get people to start writing applications to the machine. You know,
I love that it's the iPhone.
Yeah. Well, you know, people don't realize that what's really under the hood there is a full Unix Mac OS. You know, the Mac OS is really very powerful. And the kind of thing, you know, you asked the question before, what more things will we see in appliances? I think once the door is opened and people start thinking about iPhones and small devices as dedicated places to do some of the work, that the definition of computer gets blurred and the work gets spread all over the place. And I think that all of the security concerns we have will be exacerbated by just the basic openness of these architectures. You know, just saying that I want whatever I want, wherever I want it. When you can start downloading and opening a Word file on your iPhone, you know, suddenly we open up that it's no longer the computer. So do we now start building special virus protection for those devices? Do we need a device that looks at USB appliances as part of a software suite that you would load, you know, in the McAfee suite? So I think all of those things are going to happen because, you know, we don't know what kind of things could be done, but now that they can produce for $50 a dedicated computing appliance that simply plugs in and goes. Imagine what a clever hacker would do if he could break in to the inner workings of Magic Jack, and they've already sold millions of those things,
sure,
and suddenly start hijacking people's computers without them knowing it, even though they would get a full status okay report from their onboard software.
So, David, we've got to start thinking about wrapping up here. But I want to. Do you have an iPhone yet?
No, I'm still a Treo user, so I haven't gone over to the iPhone side of the world. And much of that, you're right, has been because of the limited business support for that device. But I will tell you, every time, you know, I've kind of peered over the shoulder or held one in my hand, it sure is a good looking device. That's for certain.
You know, I carry a Touch because, well, first of all, I live in South Dakota where we don't even have AT&T, so I couldn't use it anyway. But you know, I'm not sure that the phone part of it, you know, adds much, but it is an addictive little device, and you know, it's just really, really a handy thing. I'm not sure that I'm at the point where I think, you know, using it for any kind of input, including even short email messages, are painful for me with the with the little the touch screen thing, as opposed to my tactile feel and my thumbs on my Treo or my BlackBerry. You know, I'm not sure that's there, but you know, I think we're going to be us old guys will be replaced by them youngsters.
Well, and we'll see what that looks like. But I agree with you. It's nice to have the keypad, and so you know, and our quest for the perfect device continues.
I've had that discussion just recently with somebody who's had his iPhone for almost as long as they've been out, And he said for the first month or two, he would curse it every time he tried. But then the thing actually starts to learn that you have fat thumbs and fingers and starts to respond to your, idiosyncrasies, and that the typing gets easier, and that there's a curve, there's a learn curve for you, and there's a learn curve for the machine, which I found really fascinating. Because do any of you remember the Newton?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, the Newton supposedly, was algorithmic and learned how you would write. They claimed it had handwriting recognition, and that was the most frustrating thing in the world. And yet, in fact, it really did. If you went at it long enough, there was just all of the studies they did. They had people bang away at it for thousands and thousands of times before the learning happened. So supposedly that typing thing will be gone. And the other piece is that the machine is powerful enough that it will probably have a voice recognition engine in the third or fourth version of that, the way things are going. And you'll simply be able to talk and email really merge the phone part with the computer part. So I have great belief that the iPhone is the computing platform of the future for a lot of applications, not for words.
Let's stick around and see whether or not you're right on that one, Michael. You know,
okay.
We don't know for sure. Well, guys, we are out of time. Thank you so much. It was a fascinating discussion on some of these little devices, and I certainly learned a lot from both of you. David, as usual, you have me convinced that I should run home and pull the covers over my head and stay right there until somebody sounds the all clear.
Yeah, hope it's not that bad.
not coming anytime soon. Thanks so very much for sharing your time, and you have a great European vacation.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we will be together in May, and we'll select a time to record. I'll blog that, so if any of you do choose to come and join us live on TalkShoe, certainly feel free. We always like to have visitors. We had a couple of people join us today, and they're always fun to have. And if any of you want to join us, we certainly look forward to that. So, David, thank you again so much. Michael Bodner, thank you to you for again coming back, stepping back over to our profession and sharing your expertise. I
pleasure.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
For both of you, thanks so much. This has been Accounting Firm Security to Go. We recorded episode 5 today, and please keep tuning in. Tell your friends. Pop over to Intersection Live on CPATA.com. Take a look at all the rest of our series of monthly recurring podcasts. We encourage you to do that. If this is Greg LaFollette for the CPA Technology Advisor at Intersection Live. Have a great day. Thanks very much.
That wraps up this edition of Accounting Firm Security to Go. Join Greg and Dave again next month for more insight and advice on security issues. This has been a podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.